Sound Bites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 20th of June, Anno Domini 2009, and you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And we've got news, views, stuff you can use, a couple of things you can choose. Nothing you can lose. Give us a call. Our numbers are 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 if you're in the 585 area code. Outside the 585 area code, it's 1-800-790-0415 right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Let's start with... man, oh man, I swallowed my coffee wrong and I have no idea what I'm doing anymore.
Ew.
All right, here we go. Apologize to everybody out there. Let's start with the news. Our first item comes from our friend Philip Dampier, the founder of StopTheCap.com.
Did you hear about the grannies? He's got an article this morning. You know how all the people on the caps are saying, "Oh, it's only grandma's checking your email that won't run into these problems." Well, he's got a lot of grannies have written in. First thing my grandkids do is jump on the computer. I send videos for my grandkids. I'm going to get hit by this. You think I'm too stupid to realize you're trying to screw us?
Well, on Thursday, Congressman Eric Massa formally introduced the Broadband Internet Fairness Act, H.R. 2902. The drafting of the bill was prompted by thousands of constituents and industry experts who voiced their concerns in regard to the outrageous fee increase in fees proposed by broadband providers. The proposed increase, which will triple many people's internet usage rate, gouges customers. I love the way Phil writes. I just put this verbatim because it's just beautiful. Gouges customers and limits competition between internet video sites and cable networks that offer identical content. The intended result of this increase will be to reduce the public's internet usage and send customers back to cable television. Well, duh. The Broadband Internet Fairness Act will prevent the monopolistic rate increases of broadband companies by promoting the interests of broadband customers. Specifically, the bill requires internet service providers to submit plans to the Federal Trade Commission in consultation with the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, if they plan to move to a usage-based plan. Prohibits volume usage plans if the FTC determines that these plans are imposing rates, terms, and conditions that are unreasonable or discriminatory. Sets up public hearings for plans submitted to the FTC for public review and input. It does only affect internet providers with 2 million or more subscribers, so Time Warner will break up into very, very small companies.
Yeah.
And imposes penalties for broadband ISPs that ignore these rules. It's great. Congressman Massa said things like cable providers want to stifle the internet so they can rake in advertiser dollars by keeping customers from watching video on the internet. But so long as Americans can't choose, can I get like some patriotic music? But as long as Americans can't choose which cable channels they want to pay for, I don't think cable operators should be able to determine consumers' monthly internet usage. Additionally, charging based on bandwidth usage is a flawed model when the cost of usage is totally out of line with the price. Consumers are much better served by plans based on the speed of the connection rather than the amount of bandwidth used. Competition is crucial to our economy, and I refuse to let monopolistic corporations dominate the market and gouge my constituents. God bless you, Eric Massa. Which leads us, of course, to our poll of the week. That poll is about this, and the question is Eric Massa's Broadband Internet Fairness Act. It's actually not a question. It's just a title. The choices are excellent, ridiculous, who cares, no idea, but it sounds cool. Right now we have about 35 votes. Most of you had no idea what I was talking about. Hopefully that will change now that you've actually heard.
Make them aware of what's
exactly,
going on.
Yep. Exactly. And then when you're done with that, I know you have more to say about this. So if you go to the little yellow box underneath and click us, give us your opinion, it will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Very, very good. Where you can leave an opinion. Right now there are, and I can't seem to,
get this thing to scroll down. How interesting is that? Did I lock up? Oh, no, there I go.
Where you can leave an opinion on this and tell us what you want. Only a few people have done so far, but hopefully that will change. Now,
the first question, opinion is, who do I call in Canada?
Well, that's right. We are international.
In Canada, you're already screwed.
That's right.
Rogers does. Rogers, the big cable company in Canada, they pretty much already have caps and ridiculously low bandwidth caps for internet. But they did do something kind of nice this week when the iPhone tethering plan, where you can tether your iPhone to your computer and use the cell network to get on the internet, they're not charging extra for that.
Nice.
Shock to the world.
Nice.
Because that's something Rogers normally wouldn't charge
a
fortune for.
How could Rogers charge you for that? It's not their network.
Well, no, iPhone in Canada. Rogers has the iPhone in Canada. So when you're in Canada using Rogers. Because last year, the iPhone data plan was like $100 a month for 1 gigabyte. So it was a ridiculous data plan. They had a huge backlash about that.
Anyway, the point here is the thing I'm asking you is, have you called your Congress critter to support the Broadband Internet Fairness Act? And I think you should do that. Find out who your Congress individual is and call him or her and register your support for the Broadband Internet Fairness Act. I think it's important that we get our opinion out there and get ourselves heard and known and have people understand what's going on. So do that.
And basically what he's proposing is that the cable internet provider, not just cable internet providers, but the broadband internet providers have to follow sort of the same rules that the electric company and cable television providers also already have to do. You got to go to the Public Service Commission to get a rate increase approved and prove that you need this rate increase.
Right. Right. So I don't think they're asking him to do anything unusual. They're just asking him to do the same old stuff. Listen, you people need to give us a call. We are at, in the 585 area code, 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. If you are outside that 585 area code, give us a call on the toll-free line, 1-800-790-0415. Now, I know that there are a bunch of us on the internet listening to this show. There's over 60 people listening to the stream already. So I even if you're not in Rochester, you should be calling in. Give us a call. Just let us know where you are, particularly if you're out of town.
I still like Hawaii to call.
I'd like to go to Hawaii and talk to them about these things. So. And don't forget, we're also on Twitter, sound_bites. sound_bites. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Dan Agnew, listening live, even as we speak. Thank you, Dan. We love us some Dan Agnew. He's a good guy. So we're going to, you know what? Let's go right to the phones now. Why wait, I say. And I don't know why we would wait, so we're going to do it. And our first caller is Mark from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's your question?
Yeah, I just got a question. I haven't heard much about the Service Pack 2 for Vista. And what, if anything, did Microsoft accomplish with it?
Yep, we summed that up. Next question.
Okay.
That's about it. I mean, it fixed a few flaws, but, you know, not many people are bothering doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Because only from the standpoint that at least the customers I've dealt with, they don't want to take the chance. They've got things sort of stable right now.
Uh-huh.
That's the last thing they need is the more frustration. They're already frustrated with Vista as it is now. And to turn around and do a service pack and have it mess up more things, you know, they're just not willing to take the risk.
So few people are using Vista, we probably wouldn't notice, though.
Yeah. Well, this has been the other big thing right now. I've had, and I was saying this last night in Second Life, a number of folks have been, you know, getting the new systems, and I've had folks even email me saying, well, I'm thinking of, you know, upgrading it back to Windows XP.
Mm-hmm.
You know, should I do it? And I go, well, wait a minute. If you're going to get a new system right now, and, you know, Vista's a crapshoot anyways.
Mm-hmm.
If you're willing to take a gamble on Vista, why not? All right, go ahead, buy the machine, download and install the release candidate for Windows 7. I mean, both are a good gamble. Windows 7 seems to be very solid right now, and that, you know, more stuff works with it. It's backwards compatible and less issues. I mean, we've been running it for about 3 months right now, the beta. and it's been very solid. This way you save buying two operating systems. It's already come with Vista. This person was thinking of getting XP, which would have been another $200. Then come October, turn around, October, what is it, 22nd, I think it is when Windows 7 is going to come out and pay who knows what. So if you just go ahead and get the release code, which is free right now, you already have some experience with it, and it'll be better than working with Vista, and you only have to buy one operating system.
But make sure you back up all of your documents twice.
Make sure
you have all of them. Backing up a program doesn't necessarily back up the data, so make sure you have everything backed up if you're going to reformat your drive and put Windows 7 on it.
But you don't think they're ever really going to stabilize Vista the way they should have?
I think Vista is going to be the Windows ME of the 21st century.
That, yeah, can't get out of that operating system fast enough.
Exactly.
Well, it is a shame because if it's running right, like on one of my pre-configured laptops I bought with a dual core, it can run great.
If you have enough hardware, it works fine.
Right, but I also have a high-end quad-core machine with a video card that the ATI drivers and Vista are not doing too well together at all.
Well, and that's the problem. It had a limited subset of hardware that it worked with day one. And it was such a dog, nobody created better drivers.
Yeah.
Well, I won't say nobody, but a lot of people didn't.
Yeah.
And so consequently, it languished. And that's exactly what happened to Windows. Well, a lot of things happened to Windows ME.
Mm-hmm.
If you put, I've said this from the very beginning. If you put Windows ME on a brand new machine, it's very stable and it works fine depending on what you're doing and what your hardware configuration is. You know, I love the people who are always, I love Windows Vista. It's great. But it is in the right set of circumstances.
Yep.
The problem is that set of circumstances is much narrower than XP was or than Windows 7 already is in beta.
Mm-hmm.
If you're one of the lucky ones who really hit that sweet spot, God bless you. Vista works great.
And there haven't at least been many big problems reported with SP2. But as with any upgrade, backup before you install it.
Can't say that enough.
What's actually in it is event logging support for certain things that weren't there originally. Digital restriction management issues from the Windows Media Player upgrades were fixed because there were some serious problems with those. Something called the Windows Vista Feature Pack for Wireless. I don't even know what that is, but it just sounds exciting.
Better Wi-Fi performance when you're exiting Vista's sleep mode. Apparently, when you put
better meaning it will work now.
Yeah, apparently when you put it to sleep, it doesn't wake up.
Yeah, yeah.
What?
And one of the big problems that Vista has always had are those little sidebar gadgets you can
add. Yeah, that I eliminated from day one just because they're so annoying and they suck up so much resources.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, that's actually they have reduced the number of resources that are required for those sidebar gadgets.
Oh.
So if you have bucket loads of RAM. Then those sidebar and a super fast machine, those sidebar gadgets work fine. But on a limited machine, and you can't necessarily blame Microsoft. They never designed Vista to run on a low end machine. They may have, their marketing department may have said it did, but really Microsoft never designed it to work that way.
This is what we've always said though, from even back with Windows 95. You they'd always sit there and do recommended. And we always told folks, never go with the recommended.
Minimum. Yeah, ignore the minimum. In fact, double the recommended, and that's probably better.
Yeah, exactly.
What I was gonna say is we always say go beyond the recommended because you want it to work.
Yeah.
It's just like I can get on the thruway and do 40 miles an hour. I'll get to Buffalo, but if I get on it and do 65.
So would you say as a general rule, if you're running okay under Vista, the upgrade to this new Windows 7 is going to be...
Honestly, I never believe in upgrading Windows. I believe in wiping it out and starting new. I'm sorry, but the reality is that everything on Earth is in the registry, and one little error... That's one of the other problems people had upgrading from XP. The registry was slightly different, and if there was even one little glitch in the registry, it screwed up Vista pretty seriously.
Oh.
So I always suggest that you either put it on a brand new machine or wipe the machine and put it on. Now, that's a problem for a lot of people because, if you bought a machine with XP on it, you didn't necessarily get CDs with all of your software that came with the machine. And I don't have an answer for that. But upgrading can lead to problems. And if you can, don't do it.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of the computers now, it's on a hidden partition, and that's how you restore your original software.
Yeah,
if you're lucky, you can make disks, although sometimes it's just backup disks. It isn't installed disks.
Right. So you got to be very careful, but I think that Windows 7 is going to be a much better. It can't be a lot worse, but it's
can't be worse.
And the reports that we've heard says that Windows 7 actually works a lot better on lower end machines, even netbooks.
They're expecting
Microsoft
to run Windows 7 on netbooks.
Yeah, Microsoft learned their due with the problems in Vista and.
I've seen Windows 7 running on essentially this notebook. As a matter of fact, the same kind I have here. I have a Lenovo S10e,
which you can't even run Vista on, right?
You can't run Vista on it at all. I have seen Windows 7 running on it. It's slow, but it works. I run Ubuntu and it just zips along. All right, we have to take a break.
Thanks a lot.
No, thank you.
More sound bites next. Receive your Jazz 90.1 member card. Our thanks and more. Because with your Jazz 90.1 member card, you qualify for discounts at many fine member card businesses, including 45 East Fine Jewelers, Adams Basin Inn, Antonetta's Italian Restaurant, The Bop Shop, Bert Shapiro Photography, Leaf and Bean Coffee Company, Lorraine's Food Factory, Mary Boyce of Mario's Hair Studio, Mind and Body Connection, New Health Cafe, Sound Source, and Tuxedo Corner, Irondequoit and Gase locations, and Small World Bakery. For a complete and up-to-date list of member card businesses, visit our website at www.jazz901.org. To get your member card, call 966-5299 and become a member of Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 welcomes our newest member card business, Hedonist Artisan Chocolates.
Pete. All right, that sounds good. Hedonist Artisan Chocolates. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And you are listening to Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Give us a call. Our number's in the 585. Our number in the 585 area code is 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. If you are outside the lovely 585 area code, where we have a beautiful liquid sunshine day today. You can call us toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. And let's not forget that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. So, and we're going to give you plenty of opportunities over the next few months to support us as members. We're going to, we've got plans and then again plans on top of that. So, I think you really need to stay tuned. It's going to be some fun, kids. I'll tell you what, we're planning on some pretty interesting things. Dave's in the middle of taking a call, so I'll just keep chit-chatting. Let me take an email question while we wait. This is from Don from Greece, who writes. You can send us email from our website. I am so glad you'll be back on the air. You guys do a super job. You're a riot to listen to. My computers are just not as happy without your show. I hope you guys realize how much you help your listening audience and how much we appreciate it. Thank you for your dedication to your listeners. Well, thank you so much, Don. I appreciate that. No problem now that you'll be back. This is a section for your problem. No problem now that you'll be back on the air. It would be even better if your show was on cable TV. Let's don't go there. There's an idea. But, yeah, thank you very much. We're thrilled. The folks here at Jazz 90.1 were astonishingly generous to give us some time on the air every week, and we're very, very happy and very, very pleased about that. Rob Linton, the great Rob Linton! Was kind enough to drag us back onto the air, and it was really, really nice of him. I'm very pleased. And from the IRC chat on Pound Soundbites on EFNet, the doctor says, I thought that netbooks, you would be limited to 3 open applications. Not so far, no, not at all. Not under Linux, certainly.
That was one of the rumors about Windows 7 is that you would only be able to run 3 applications under Windows 7 on a netbook. And some of that would probably be because to limit the performance hit, one of the problems with netbooks is being lower performance machines. You get too many programs running and they just run slower. And then you blame the operating system, not the fact that you are running too many programs.
Yeah, right.
So Microsoft thought, hey, we'll just limit you to three, and then you won't run into that problem. But I think from what I've read, they've backed down on that feature.
Yeah, I don't know. But under Linux, of course, I'm running Ubuntu on this machine, so I can run everything I want. And it's using like no processor. And I am running three things, one of which is Adobe Air, which is a pig.
Yeah.
So,
but you have those
problem.
Cool animations from the internet now. Well, it runs all the time and waits for something to come in from the internet.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's running a Seismic Desktop for Twitter. Don't forget, you can send us a tweet at @sound_bytes. We're on EFNet with all the really crazy people who are on IRC. And, of course, we're at Jazz. Member support at Jazz 90.1. Our next caller is Ernesto from Rochester, New York.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Yeah, listen, I'm having trouble recording on Creator Ultimate. I have a 64-bit machine. Every time I put a CD to burn, it says, I need a new disc. I put new disc, different brand disc, and nothing. It keeps giving me the same error messages. I went on the knowledge base for Creator, and I couldn't get too much information. Something about maybe I need to update the firmware on my burners, which are DVD burners, and they're somewhat old. I'm not sure if I can't update the firmware. Do I have to get a new burner? Or?
Well, first thing, yeah, I think you probably do. I would have to suggest that.
Have you tried using the Windows burning software or other burning software? It may be the drive has failed, or there may be something in the software.
In any case, if it's an old drive,
yeah,
certainly buying a new drive is not a bad idea, and they're not expensive at all.
It'll okay. probably be a lot faster than what you already have.
And it'll be faster. All you have to do is go to the Creator Ultimate Manual. I know that's a dirty word. I apologize for saying it on the air. And look at the brands that are supported and buy one of those brands.
Okay.
Yeah, the issue may be that you need a 64-bit firmware driver for your optical drive.
Right.
And so you'd go to the manufacturer of the optical drive and see if they have one for Windows 64.
Right. Many older devices only have 32-bit drivers, and those generally do not work well on a 64-bit machine.
Yeah, on their website, these are archived, and it doesn't tell you anything about update drivers or anything else.
Right, so I would suggest that there aren't any.
So just buy another drive.
Buy another drive. Make sure, A, it's on the list for the Creator software.
Okay.
And B, that it has a 64-bit driver available for it.
Okay.
And you should be on your way.
Okay, thanks a lot, guy.
No, thank you.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome. That's one of the big problems that people are having nowadays. 64-bit sounds so great, but not everything works in 64-bit. I hate to say it, but it's the way the world works.
And it's been a catch-22, is that developers haven't released 64-bit software, because it takes a lot of time in often cases to rewrite their software for 64-bit. They're not releasing the software because no one has 64-bit OSs, so there's no incentive to it. So
even under Linux, everything under Linux on 64-bit, my machine at work is a 64-bit system. Everything works fine except some of the third-party things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't run Adobe Air, for example. Not that that's a huge loss in my part. I can't do certain codecs. Don't have 64-bit versions that work well.
Right.
So, from all my servers, are 64-bit. They could be 128-bit, 256-bit, I'd be happy. But, you know, for desktops, 32-bits is still the way to go. I don't care what anybody says. If you're going to buy a new machine, you know, I don't know at this point. You know, I don't know when all of the 64-bit drivers are going to be available. I don't know when all the 64-bit everything is going to be available.
We're hoping that it'll go that direction.
Well, the biggest issue now is if you want to use more than 3 gigs of RAM, you have to have a 64-bit
Windows OS.
Yeah. So, and a lot of machines are now coming with 4 gigs, so it basically ignores that fourth gig. But for using a lot of programs at once, you know, you've got your DVD ripping, you've got your CD burning, and you're watching a movie on the internet, 64-bit works great for that with 4 gigs of RAM.
Assuming all those drivers are there.
That's exactly.
Catch-22. Exactly. Yeah, 64-bit is a beautiful thing, assuming you get there.
I asked that last night, and I don't think anybody knew yet. Does Windows 7 fix the 64-32 switch back-and-forth issues?
Nothing can fix that. That's built into the chips. That's built into the CPU.
Really?
The CPU has to do a full state change every time it goes from 64 to 32 bits. Slows it down astonishingly.
We don't have that problem on the Mac.
Yeah, you do. It's just faster.
We don't notice that problem on the Mac.
You don't notice that problem on the Mac because there are very few 32-bit things you do. And you can...
So everything is already 64-bit for us?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Plus, the odd thing is that the IBM G5 processor Apple used was 64-bit. And then when the first Intel Core, the Core 1, actually, the beginning, the Core Duo, was back to 32-bit. So it was a backward step until Intel caught up with IBM.
Right. Yep. All right, we're going to take a quick break.
Due to my misfire. Well, it's this one I'll take the blame for because I did hit the button, but for some reason it wanted to play two or three times, and Rob called in and said, nope, nothing got played over the air, so my bad.
Oh, wonderful. All righty then. All right.
You last week.
Is this thrown over the air? Should I be talking about this now? All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. You are listening to Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by the REOC. The REOC offers training in the fields of healthcare, office technology, early childhood development, culinary, cosmetology, or truck driving. You can also prepare for college or get your GED. REOC offers full-time, part-time, day or evening schedules. For more information, you may call the REOC at 232-2730 or visit reoc.brockport.edu. REOC and you, expecting excellence, achieving success.
When you become a member or renew your membership to Jazz 90.1, you receive your Jazz 90.1 member card, our thanks, and more. Because with your Jazz 90.1 member card, you qualify for discounts at many fine member card businesses, including 45 East Fine Jewelers, Adams Basin Inn, Antonetta's Italian Restaurant, The Bop Shop, Bert Shapiro Photography, Leaf and Bean Coffee Company, Lorraine's Food Factory, Mary Boyce of Mario's Hair Studio, Mind and Body Connection, New Health Cafe, Sound Source, and Tuxedo Corner, Arondequoit and Gase locations, and Small World Bakery. For a complete and up-to-date list of member card businesses, visit our website at www.jazz901.org. To get your member card, call 966-5299 and become a member of Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 welcomes our newest member card business, Hedonist Artisan Chocolates.
Hi, this is Otto Bruno, inviting you to a musical party this and every week on the Sunday Music Festa and the Otto Show. Our guests may include Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, Bing Crosby, Rosemary Clooney, or who knows, maybe even Count Basie or Joe Williams, Bobby Darin. Lady Ella herself could stop by. It's a musical celebration every week on the Sunday Music Festa and the Otto Show. That's Sundays at 12 noon right here on Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
And you are listening to Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Give us a call if you're in the 585 area code. It's 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Outside that beautiful 585 area code, it's 1-800-790-0415. You can find those numbers on our website at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And also, of course, at the member-supported Jazz 90.1 website, jazz901.org.
And that beer truffle collection at Hedonist Artisan Chocolate looks interesting.
I don't know why there are no samples. All right.
Rob, bring us some back. You're down that way.
What makes the iPhone... Hey, you know what? I bet he's listening. That'll be a new experience for
us. He is listening because he just called in to yell at
Dave. Right.
He let me know I screwed up.
What makes the iPhone 3GS tick, and why is it the fastest iPhone ever? The ad copy on Apple's website claims that it launches applications faster and that web pages render in a fraction of the time. Apple doesn't stop there. Improved performance and updated 3D graphics deliver an incredible gaming experience too, according to Apple. So what makes it so fast? The 3GS uses a 600 megahertz Samsung processor based on the ARM Cortex-8 A8 design. The iPhone also integrates a PowerVR SGX graphics chip from Imagination Technologies. This not surprisingly beats the now obsoleted iPhone 3G, sans the S, which uses an older ARM design that runs at about 400 megahertz and a prior generation graphics chip. CNET reviews has validated Apple's speed claim, saying for the most for most native applications that don't depend on a cellular or Wi-Fi connection, the iPhone 3GS was consistently faster. The iPhone 3GS opened the iPod player almost 5 seconds faster, was much quicker at loading some notoriously slow apps. The iPhone 3GS also started up much quicker than the iPhone. We were up and running in 26 seconds instead of 50. 50 seconds? Takes you a minute to get to the point where you can make a phone call? Jeez and crackers. The Palm Pre
That's from power off completely.
Right. The Palm Pre also uses the Cortex A8 application processor and the same graphics chip. So we'll see how people like it. Again, though, you know what? I don't get that excited because it's an evolution, not a revolution.
Companies have already posted tear aparts where they've ripped the pieces apart and detailed everything that's in them. The biggest thing, the physically biggest thing, and it's the battery, of course.
Before we go to the phone, I have to read a couple of the things that. The various my friends, the people I really like who are at Woot.com.
But they're not your friends. You just like
they're
them.
Not my friends. I just like them. Well, here you call them Leo all the time. Like you're
yeah, it's the first person we know them.
Yeah, right. They've written a list of 12 bugs we found in the iPhone OS 3.0. I love this. Multimedia messaging does not support sculpture, macrame, or interpretive dance. I'll just read a few of these.
So it's not multimedia.
Right. Turned on adult content filler, but everybody in my video still has their clothes on. Adding a task to the calendar does not result in that task getting done. Clearly a mistake. Apple needs to update that one immediately. Still no apps to cure the nagging feeling that I should have bought a Palm Pre. I'm not even going to read that one, but it's very funny. Apple still hasn't fixed the no hardware keyboard bug, and the cut function does not apply to the monthly AT&T bill.
I tried out tethering, but I broke my finger smacking the phone around the pole.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we're going to go back to the phones. Our next caller is somebody of whom I have no name. Dar, where are you calling from?
Hi, Oshawa, guys.
Oshawa?
Ontario.
Ottawa, Ontario, Canada.
Oshawa. Yeah, Osh. Yep.
All right.
Okay, question. Do a shields up test, okay?
Yep.
And using Mint, number 6. And the bleeding thing failed on the solicited TCP packets and the ping reply. But... Now, this is what I don't understand. Why doesn't Ubuntu, or Mint, or whatever, by default, enable firewalls?
Actually, it does, but it leaves them open pretty much.
Well, that's what a politician would say.
Well, right. It allows by default. There's a couple of interesting things that you can run that will fix that. How come I clicked on...
Yes, we should mention that Shields Up is a free port test from grc.com to test how secure your connection is from the internet and if anyone can sneak in, basically.
Yeah. One of the things that you, there are a couple of things you can do here, Dar. The first thing I would suggest is there's a program called Firestarter.
Okay, that's SPM installed that already.
Okay, and in there you can start to block things as they come along. The other thing you can do is run a program called AppArmor.
Familiar with that, but again, it's the how do you do it?
How do you install them?
No, that it's just how do you run them? Like, Firestarter blocks certain things. You mean go to each website?
No, no, no. What Firestarter can do is when something comes into your machine, you see it there, and you can block all of that port or some of that port or any of that port.
Well, okay, excuse me for interrupting. How do you so Firestarter has to be running while you're surfing.
Yeah, Firestarter would then be running all the time.
Well, the thing is, it's never, ever appeared. It's been activated, okay, the green check mark's there, but there haven't been any notifications or nothing like that, or no nagging sort of a la Windows.
Well, generally what that means, you got that little circle in the green circle up in your bar there?
It doesn't appear on the taskbar at all.
Okay, then you're probably not actually running it. Okay, first let me explain a couple. Let me first send you, this is actually timely. I've always had this thing called a security tango out there for Windows people, and Linux people have asked me to do some stuff for them. So
and
what you
done.
Need to do is this. You need to go to the security tango at securitytango.com. Click on Let's Dance, and you have currently two choices, the Windows Waltz and the Linux Lambada. I have not yet put up the Mac Arena. And so, yeah, thank you. So go there and follow the checklist for the Lambada, and that should help set up your machine at a start to begin with, and we'll go from there.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Dar.
Cheers.
Have fun.
Bye.
All right, we're going to take a break, apparently. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1, and we are Soundbites.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by the REOC. The REOC offers training in the fields of healthcare, office technology, early childhood development, culinary, cosmetology, or truck driving. You can also prepare for college or get your GED. REOC offers full-time, part-time, day or evening schedules. For more information, you may call the REOC at 232-2730 or visit reoc.brockport.edu. REOC and you, expecting excellence, achieving success.
When you become a member or renew your membership to Jazz 90.1, you receive your Jazz 90.1 member card, our thanks, and more. Because with your Jazz 90.1 member card, you qualify for discounts at many fine member card businesses, including 45 East Fine Jewelers, Adams Basin Inn, Antonetta's Italian Restaurant, The Bop Shop, Bert Shapiro Photography, Leaf and Bean Coffee Company, Lorraine's Food Factory, Mary Boyce of Mario's Hair Studio, Mind and Body Connection, New Health Cafe, Sound Source, and Tuxedo Corner, Irondequoit and Gates locations, and Small World Bakery. For a complete and up-to-date list of member card businesses, visit our website at www.jazz901.org. To get your member card, call 966-5299 and become a member of Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 welcomes our newest member card business, Hedonist Artisan Chocolates.
Vaccination is the best way to stay protected against the flu. But with no vaccine available yet to fight the H1N1 flu virus, there are other steps you can take. Families Fighting Flu reminds you to cover your nose and mouth when you cough or sneeze. You can even cough into your elbow. Wash your hands with soap and water. Alcohol-based hand cleaners are also effective. And disinfect frequently touched surfaces with an appropriate bleach-based solution. Germs can spread by touching infected surfaces and then your face. For more, visit familiesfightingflu.org, a public service from Families Fighting Flu.
Hi, this is Otto Bruno. Join me every Sunday afternoon from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And we are, that's so short. You're listening to Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Give us a call. Our phone number in the 585 area code 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Outside the 585 area code, it's toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. We are going to go back to the phones. Or not. Our next caller is Dan from Rochester. Welcome, Dan. What's your question?
Well, hang on a minute.
Dan's not there.
We had a dial tone.
I don't think it was Dan's fault.
Nope.
Hello?
We're still getting a dial tone.
Yeah.
I'm getting nothing. All right. We'll skip Dan then.
Hold on. I'll try this again.
We're going to try it again. Hold on. Hold on, Dan, if you're listening.
Hello, Dan. Yeah, hold on.
All right. The way the phone system
Dave's
works is kind
again.
Of interesting. We have to... We answered on one phone, then we have to forward it to the board so we can pick it up on the air. And
then you got to hit a couple of buttons to get it on the air, and then you have to reverse all that to get it off. It just, it's a lot of work, but and Dave is still learning. Dave, I wish you could see him. He kind of looks like a deer in the headlights right now. It's cute. It's a cute look for Dave. But I'm for Dar, I'm actually running the Shields Up thing, and the first three tests passed with flying colors, and I'm on Ubuntu, and I did run. Yeah, passed again, passed again, passed again. And I did, of course, run the dance the Lambada, so maybe that helps.
I think Dan should be there now.
You think Dan's there now? Let's give him a try. Dan, are you there?
No, this is John.
John, well, we'll talk to you too, John.
Okay, great, I appreciate it.
Where are you calling from?
Ontario, New York.
Ontario, New York. Ooh. How are things in Ontario, New York?
Wet.
Last
really?
Call was from Ontario, Canada, now Ontario, New
Ontario,
York.
New York.
And we need Ontario, California's next, right?
That's right. All right, what's your question, John?
On my daughter's laptop, she's running Windows Vista and has 2 gigs of memory, and we're having a lot of problems with Firefox staying alive on there. It'll start, you can go to a couple of web pages, then it really slows down, and then it just drops, and then nothing happens, it freezes. So if you shut down Firefox and then try and reopen it, it says Firefox is already running. You need to either shut off Firefox or restart your computer. And if you look at, do Control-Alt-Delete and look at the task manager, Firefox is not running. And the only thing you can do is restart it, but then we run into the same issue over and over and over again with it.
There is a little Firefox bootloader that runs in the background to make Firefox run faster. And, we've seen occasions where you quit Firefox and that bootloader stays running, so Firefox thinks it's still running. But it sounds like you've got a bad Firefox install.
Either a bad Firefox install or a virus.
I've danced a tango, my feet are sore.
Well, try downloading, assuming you can with Firefox, otherwise do it with Internet Explorer. I almost choked saying the word. download the latest version of Firefox.
Okay.
Uninstall the current version. Then reboot your machine and install Firefox again.
All right.
It is very possible, as Steve said, that you got yourself a slightly damaged version of Firefox. When you download things over the Internet, this stuff happens.
Okay. I'll give that a whirl. I appreciate it.
Give it a shot. Let us know.
Yep.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, no, what was happening, and I apologize to Dan that I lost him, when I'm hitting the transfer button, I go to hit because I got to punch in 4 numbers. I'm going to punch in the 4 numbers, but the 3 is sticking. So I'm only getting 1, and it's like it wasn't bouncing back up, so that's how I lost him.
Right. So, yeah, but those of you who are going to grc.com and running Shields Up, a file sharing passed, common ports passed, all service ports passed, messenger spam I'm not going to bother to run because it doesn't have... I don't have Windows Messenger on this machine because it's a Linux box.
You should run it and see what it says.
Yeah,
it'd be fun to see what error you get.
All right, let's see what happens. Well, theoretically, I don't get an error. It just passes.
Theory, but...
Windows Messenger spam. Okay.
Now, I don't know if I mentioned it on the air, but I was doing speed tests to just see what kind of internet we have here in the studio, and I was getting 100 megabit throughput to the Frontier... internet server, and that's when we realized we must be on a cached proxy here at the school.
You're right.
So my first test was, you know, 10 megabit. My second test was just to the mail, to the cache server.
100 megabit.
On the 100 meg Ethernet we're on.
Right. Right. So, yeah, messenger spam just comes back and tells you to run it again because it can't figure it out. So, yeah, it looks like, and I have, of course, danced the Lombada on this thing. So I'm thinking it seems to be working just fine.
So it may be a configuration error on her computer that either the firewall's not on or it's not on enough.
Well, it runs at boot up. The firewall is called IP tables, and it runs at boot. So the only I don't know what to tell her. I don't run Mint, but it's an Ubuntu variation. So unless they've turned something off, IP tables should be running.
That's in trouble. Until you have it right in front of you, you can see what's going on. It's so hard to visualize. You know, like a lot of stuff we do. Well, we sit there and try to walk people through stuff, and you're literally trying to visualize it in your mind.
Right. Do we have somebody on the phone?
No, give me a minute to transfer. Do the paperwork first.
The call. Yeah, we'll do the paperwork. Here's another call. Here's another email that we received from Marie from Rochester. Marie, the dawn is breaking. My son's hard drive on his PC went. His files are backed up to an external hard drive. I am giving him my iMac and getting myself a new one. Nice. Perks of being a mom. Will there be any issues taking his files and loading them on the iMac? He is concerned about all his music, all on iTunes, all his games, Doom and other games, and his pictures. He's going over to the dark side, kicking and screaming, but he has no choice. He's getting a free iMac. Thanks, Marie. Marie, if he doesn't want it, you can adopt me.
Yeah. Basically, files will transfer just fine. Programs will not. Programs require an operating system. It is possible to install Windows on the Mac and then run those Windows programs on the Mac, turn it into a Windows PC. But the file should transfer no problem. And in fact, the iTunes library, if you copy the entire iTunes folder, it will maintain the library structure and remember your playlists and your favorite counts and everything like that in the whole iTunes. And then pictures, you know, generic pictures and JPEGs. Everything should open fine. So the big question becomes, what program did he use to create those documents? And you may need that program on the Mac. So for example, if you use Microsoft Word on Windows, you'll have to get Microsoft Word on the Mac, or a Microsoft Word equivalent like OpenOffice.
OpenOffice.org.
Which is free, or NeoOffice, which is a more Mac-like version of OpenOffice.
And also free.
And also free as well, yep. The file should transfer no problem.
Yep. There you go. Our next caller, maybe... we're hoping will be Dan.
I'm going to do a happy dance if it does.
Dan from Rochester, New York.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Oh, Dave's doing the happy. That's ugly. Keep talking, Dan.
Hello, good afternoon, gentlemen. Can you hear me?
Yep. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Excellent.
I called last week in regards to the fact that I uninstalled my old McAfee security suite, and I downloaded and installed the CA security suite, which is part of the Roadrunner package. I'm still having some issues with the firewall, and I need to get you maybe your opinion. Currently, I have the alert setting set for medium, where alerts requiring your attention will be displayed, but it seems that every time I go to a website, security alert keeps on popping up. And a lot of times it's something like private header information from, you know, one of, you know, a bunch of things like C5 Zito or Unicast or Casali Media, wants to come up. Should I allow these or should I deny them?
But if I deny them.
Sometimes the web page doesn't load properly, especially if I go to an airline or a TV radio station.
Right. Here's the deal with these things. Some of these are legitimate.
They're commercial advertisers.
Right.
And websites run on advertising. That's how you don't have to pay for it. The advertising does. And in some cases, when you block the advertisers, the website just won't work.
So how do you make the determination on which ones to allow and which ones to deny?
I generally allow... Now, is it asking you about cookies or is it asking you about blocking the site entirely?
Well, I have one right now. It says private header information from antakota.net, and it gives a 127.0.0.1 to allow access. Click on this site to manage sites under firewall privacy.
Now, that's your computer sending information to the other end. That's one of the other tests that GRC has, is the browser header information. Your browser tells the other end all kinds of things about your computer. And so the firewall is popping up and saying, do you want to tell the other end that you're running on Windows with Internet Explorer, with, you know, with this, that, and the other thing?
So mostly I should deny it.
Deny it, and yeah. If the site doesn't work, then you have to allow it or use a different site.
Gotcha. Now, another interesting thing is when I turn on my computer and start the computer, I get the same kind of warning, but this one says someone is trying to access your computer, remote address 255 dot, well, it's actually 255 four times, UDP port 68 from a particular address, port 67. What the heck is that?
UDP port 68?
Yes, from 10.241.64.1 port 67.
That's your DHCP server.
Yeah.
So your DHCP server is trying to talk to your computer to give you an internet address. And
that is perfectly acceptable. In fact, you can't run without it. So you should definitely say yes to that one and make it permanent.
Well, but I was concerned because it says someone. It doesn't, you know.
Well, it doesn't know who.
What was that IP address again?
I'll tell you. It's someone is trying to access your computer, remote address 255.255.255.255 four times, UDP port 68 from 10.241.64.1 port 67.
So we're both typing a lookup here, and we're going to see who that is.
The 10 net is internal. It's not routable. So that's your router's
right.
network.
Your mm-hmm. route, right. So your router is talking to your computer to give you an internet address.
Generally speaking, anything from a 10 net is perfectly acceptable, since that cannot be routed over the internet. It can only be local.
Alrighty.
So accept that one and continue to accept it, because what it's trying to do is give you your IP address so that it can run.
And that's what we'd mentioned earlier, is that there's so many bad guys in the on the internet doing the same things that the good guys need to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to distinguish between them.
Yeah, so you recommend next time it comes up, hit OK, allow.
Yeah, as long as it's from that 10 net, you're good.
Yep. Okay.
And there should be an always allow.
One last quick one. Stack Overflow at line 105. This occurred to me yesterday, first time in years. I've never seen this before. Any explanation? Stack Overflow?
What were you running?
I was just on the internet site, and I went to one particular website, and all of a sudden my hard drive
That's
just started turning.
That's likely a problem at their end.
Something went wrong in
when
the program.
When was the last time you danced the security tango, by the way? Okay, you need
ago.
To do it.
Yeah.
If you have to go, you need to do it.
Okay.
And do a thorough clean.
Okay.
All righty?
All righty.
You never know.
Thank you very much. Yep.
Thank you, Dan, for your patience. Again, I know it was due diligence.
Everybody's allowed a mistake once in a while.
Yeah, this is my first time flying solo without Rob in the building, that, you know, he can come flying in. And like I say, there's one button on the phone is sticking on me, so I got to sort of...
I actually thought at one point watching him that he was standing on a bed of coals, the way he was jumping around from one thing to the next as he was going on. Dave's had many, many years of just sitting during sound bites
19,
and not actually doing
and
anything, and it's a joy to watch him doing all the work now.
Well, back at another former station, remember, every time it used to be a joke, every time I got behind the board to answer the phones,
we didn't
the
let
phones
you run,
would go dead.
We didn't let you run the board there because you just couldn't.
Yep.
All right, our next, we have Dennis on the line now, theoretically?
No.
No, we don't. Will we?
That was Dennis.
Keep talking and we'll come back.
Do another email question while he answers the phone.
We'll do another email. Actually, we'll maybe do another news item. How's that sound?
Yeah.
Okay,
Doc,
hold on. Jamie Thomas Rassett
went to trial this week hoping to nullify an earlier judgment against her on charges that she illegally downloaded music from the internet. This is a cautionary tale for all of those of you who download music illegally. But in this week's jury trial, she was deemed liable to pay $80,000 per song. That's $1.92 million. An earlier jury had delivered a verdict in which she was deemed liable for only $9,250 for each downloaded song. This week's trial in a Minnesota federal court was short and sweet for the Recording Industry Association of America, which has brought the charges against Thomas Rassett in the nation's sole music file-sharing case that has gone to trial. They now have a precedent, $80,000 a song.
They could have fined her anywhere between $750 and $150,000 per song. They split the middle just about in half.
Yep. Basically, the jury awarded the RIAA $1.92 million, or $80,000 a song. Earlier, the RIAA had initiated more than 30,000 lawsuits against people it claimed had illegally downloaded music. Most of them were settled for $3,500, which is a tad less than $1.92 million. An official at the RIAA said the association was willing to settle for a figure of less than $80,000 a song. Jamie Thomas Rassett said, "Hey, I'm a single mom. I don't have a job. What are they going to do to me? The heck with them." Basically, you know, she said, "I got no money. Where you can't take money from somebody who has no money." Right. So that's. That was actually, you know, kind of sad for her. But you gotta pay attention, folks. Everybody talks about how, you know, music should be free and down with the man and, you know, posturepedic right
arm. If you're the guy writing the music, you want to get paid for it. Even if it's the music industry takes 99% of it, you still want your penny.
That's exactly right. And you know what? There's a lot of free music out there that's completely legal. And, you know, you ought to try some of it. You might actually find you like it instead of just... being a sheep and going along with the crowd. Try something new once in a while. See what you think. All right, we are going to take a break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. You're listening to member-supported Jazz 90.1. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 585-966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. On Soundbites on Jazz 90.1.
Got dead air. All right.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And you are listening to Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
We need a station ID there that didn't play like it's supposed to.
I hit the button and nothing was coming out.
Ooh,
of it.
We have help.
Excellent. We have help.
Something didn't play that needed to play.
Dave's been a mite confused, and hopefully we'll get unconfused in just a half a second.
Live from Jazz Street.
We're inviting folks to stop by. We have, you know, somebody who stopped by to become a member. We've had folks dropping in dollars to the Jazz Jar.
You can also stop by the Jazz 90.1 booth to meet on-air personalities from your favorite Jazz 90.1 programs and register to win great prizes. We'll see you on Jazz Street.
Quite some time. And, I got a little bit of a thing with that, whatever. But out of the clear blue, the same thing. Shelly Mann called me. Chuck Berghoffer, yeah, this is Shelly Mann. Holy crap. And he says, I'm opening a new club. And I'm starting. He didn't say come down and audition. I can't remember what he said. We're having a rehearsal on whatever he said. It wasn't an audition. That word wasn't used. Huh. But anyway, I walked into the club. We started playing. We played maybe one tune, maybe two at the most. And he just looks up at me and says, "You got the gig." And that's the way it was. It was wonderful. And he took me under his wing. And what an education that was.
Chuck Berghoffer, sitting in with me and you. His newest release, the film music of Ralph Ranger, Thanks for the Memory. More information is available, sittinginjazz.com.
Hear a full hour of Sitting In with Helen Borgers every Friday at noon on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And we are Soundbites.
Why does it always have to mess up on me?
You're the guy behind the buttons,
well,
man.
I hit our outro music, and then I went ahead and hit the button to play the top of the hour. And
nothing happened.
Nothing happened. Was it? Did you hear anything?
No.
I gotta say it's gotta be Picnic.
Thank you.
You know what it is? It's that Mac sitting next to you too. That middle screen is a Mac.
Rob's gonna hang me.
That's Dave Enright on the buttons, ladies and gentlemen. Dave Enright. All right. Here we are on member-supported Ugly Radio, Jazz 90.1. Give us a call. It's 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Outside the 585 area code, it's 1-800-790-0415. We're going to go back to the phones, and we're going to talk to Dennis from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dennis. What's your question?
Hi. I stopped listening to your show, I don't know, a while before you went from 2 hours to 1 hour at that other station.
Okay.
So I kind of been hiding under a rock. It's kind of hard to listen to the show from jail. But So all I know is that Windows 7 exists. Can you give me sort of a summary of what the status is of Windows 7 and apparently it sounds like what you said today will work on computers that have Windows XP, and it's a beta version or not?
Yeah, it's a beta right now, and the theory is it's going to hit the streets live in, say, October-ish.
Okay.
That's the theory right now. In fact, right now you can download it for free from Microsoft and install it on anything, and it will...
It is a beta release candidate. It is not a full version. It's not the complete version, so it will crash.
Right.
So don't run it on a production machine that needs to be up.
Right. It is not guaranteed to run every day. It is not guaranteed to run with all hardware.
But it seems to run pretty good.
It does seem to run pretty good because it's still beta. It theoretically will run on machines that are of a lower power than what was required for Vista, because they also want to run it on those new netbooks that have come out, those
mm-hmm.
little guys.
Mm-hmm.
They want it to run on that. So the theory is it will take much less power than Vista did. The theory is that it will also have a whole lot more drivers and more compatibility with programs than Vista did. But all of this is conjecture. It seems to run really, really, really well right now, but we don't know all the features that are in it because it's still a beta, and they've told us not all the features are in it.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know everything about it until it comes out live. Lots of people are downloading it. Lots of people are running it and are very happy with it. Very few people I've met who are not happy with it, and those are the ones with very, very old hardware, 7, 8, 9 years old, and you know, they're... printer hasn't been made in 6 years and there's no driver for it,
that's
sort of thing.
One of the types of computers I have. The other concern was just older computers that have XP on them. I was wondering whether this was going to be like Vista, where you needed a new high-end machine, or you could use one. I gather Vista, the support is ending for that soon, and so I could just put this in place of, when it comes out, I could put it in place of the machines that have Vista on them, even though they're not real high-end machines. They're sort of mid-range kind of thing.
They actually just extended support for XP, right? Another 6 months?
They've extended support a year. They're now saying 2011, I guess. It was 2010, and now it's 2011.
Okay.
So they've extended it for another year. So you should get, I don't know, you will certainly get security updates as to whether or not you get other, like, whiz-bang fun things. That probably won't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But you should continue to get 2011.
Do we know the cost of Windows 7 when it's actually going to come out? I mean, is it going to be a few hundred bucks or
something?
Nobody knows.
If they follow pattern, it's going to be $200 for, what is it, Home Basic, $300 for Home Premium, $400 for Business, and $600
right.
for Ultimate.
Microsoft gives nothing away, so I wouldn't expect it to be cheap.
Okay, so
there
it runs great now, but if when they add these features, is it going to start to be a dog after they add all these features?
Who knows?
Features?
The whole point is that they want it to run on netbooks. So the theory is it won't, because otherwise it won't run on netbooks.
Okay. Well, that's great.
But we don't know.
Well, you've answered all my questions.
There you go.
Thanks for your help.
Welcome back.
Bye.
It's always good to get new listeners or old listeners back. In fact, Microsoft has extended XP availabilities just hours after a noted research analyst criticized Microsoft plans to limit sales of Windows XP PCs. The company said it would extend the aged operating system's lifespan in the post-Windows 7 world to as late as April 2011. On Tuesday, Michael Silver of Gartner took Microsoft to the woodshed over the company's decision to let computer makers sell PCs with Windows XP for only 6 months after Windows 7 debuts. Silver blasted the idea as a real mess and said that it would make it more difficult for companies to manage their PCs and more expensive to upgrade them to Windows 7 down the road. Because of Windows 7's October 22nd launch date, the six-month cap meant that OEMs would have to stop shipping PCs downgraded from Windows 7 Professional or Windows 7 Ultimate to Windows XP Professional at or around April 22nd, 2010. That policy puts enterprises in a bind. For an organization that's trying to skip Vista, that means they really need to buy new PCs that they need to run on XP and want to upgrade later to Windows 7 by April 21st, 2010. But a lot of organizations won't be ready for Windows 7 until later in 2010 or even early 2011. So any PCs they buy from April 22nd, 2010 on, and until they're ready to deploy Windows 7, would need an upgrade license or software assurance to allow them to run Windows temporarily.
And a lot of companies tend to skip every other version of, and people, regular people even too, every other version of OSs and programs, because you can't afford to upgrade every single time.
Right. And so Microsoft agreed that was true, and it says Windows 7 Professional and Ultimate customers will have the option to downgrade to Windows XP Professional from PCs that ship within 18 months following the general availability of Windows 7 or until the release of a Windows 7 service pack, whichever is sooner, and if a service pack is developed.
If.
Yeah, if. Because they're going to get it right the first time. So that's nice, and we'll see where that takes us. So 2011 is the date. And I think we have Dar back on the line. Welcome, Dar. What's your question?
Howdy. It's a continuation of the fire starter thing.
Right.
When you've got the screen for the network device set up, this is a dumb thing to ask, do you have to check mark start the firewall on dial-up? And there's another one. Check
You're on
mark.
Dial-up?
Hey?
You're on dial-up?
No.
Oh, okay, good.
Okay, the second one is the IP address is assigned via DHCP. Is that got to be checkmarked?
If your IP is assigned by DHCP, which it probably is, well, in Canada, yeah, different ISPs. How is your IP assigned? Is it DHCP or is it PPOE?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. If you don't use dial-up, you certainly don't need to check that one.
Right.
As for the other, 99.999% of the time, people get their internet protocol address via DHCP, so I would suggest you check that.
Okay, and the thing is, that the other screen shows that the firewall is running, so hit the lock firewall, and yeah, she locked up good like an engine.
Yep.
Yeah. So it had to be that stupid little IP address thing.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing,
yeah.
The glitches you are experiencing in the studio, it points to signs of the Prince of Darkness.
Ah.
You remember
no,
him?
No, it's Picnic.
It's Picnic.
Yep.
Well, no, I guess I'm too old for you guys. I was thinking of Lucas Electrics.
Oh, Lucas, holy cow.
On British cars, remember?
Yep-er. I had two friends who bought matching MGs, British Racing Green MGs. And they spent, all I ever saw of them on the weekend were the bottoms of their shoes. They spent every weekend underneath those cars tinkering with something, and 8 out of 10 times it was the electrics.
But you know what?
Really?
Go ahead.
Out of 6 days, they wouldn't run right. But on that seventh, there was nothing sweeter.
Yeah, yep. It's the truth. It's absolutely the truth. That's very funny.
Well, maybe that's why people stick with Microsoft.
Because on that seventh day?
Mm-hmm. When it does work, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
They're Lucas Electrics of the software world. That's very funny, Dar.
Well, as an old mechanic, that's all I got going for me, guys.
That's very, very funny. Thank you so much, and I'm glad it's working out for you.
We'll see, sir. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Call us back.
So it was
cheers. Bye. Thanks.
Have fun.
It was British Leyland and Lucas Electric that caused all those problems.
Yep. I like Dar. She's okay.
Yeah, she's...
That's very funny. Got to tell you about Google. Google last month reserved 1 million phone numbers, signaling that it may finally be ready to roll out its long-anticipated Google Voice service. If you're not familiar with this whole Grand Central Google Voice thing, the service is pretty powerful utility that lets you unite all of your phone numbers into a single line. Anybody can dial that one number and, based on your custom settings, be routed appropriately to the device of your choice, whether that's your cell phone, home phone, office phone, whatever. It also includes a central voicemail system that's accessible on the web, along with a host of other cool features, such as the ability to listen live as callers leave a message and then decide whether you want to take the call. Oh, and it's going to be free, apparently. Sources could not say when the 1 million numbers may be assigned. The 1 million numbers are an indication that Google is close to adding a significant number of users, say about 1 million of them. A Google spokes individual who would only say, as a matter of policy, we typically do not comment on contracts with third-party technology suppliers. A public launch has been anticipated since Google said in March the service would be open to new users soon. There's been speculation that the service would begin this past week, but Google has yet to make an announcement.
It still says coming soon.
Exactly. People who are using it love it. It's completely changed the way they use voicemail and communicate in general. The rush to grab Google Voice numbers is going to be gigantic.
That was the big anticipation when Google was bidding on the FCC spectrum, that 700, 800 megahertz spectrum, that you might get a physical phone and have free telephone calls from Google.
Yep. Google Voice has a number of unique features, including call transfer between a user's devices, multi-party conferencing, conversion of voice calls to text messages, cut-rate international calling, and call transcription, no less. And it also integrates it with your Gmail contact list. But you get one phone number, no matter where you are, home, wherever, and it's just it's an astonishing thing. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. You're listening to Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of the 2009 Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by the REOC. The REOC offers training in the fields of healthcare, office technology, early childhood development, culinary, cosmetology, or truck driving. You can also prepare for college or get your GED. REOC offers full-time, part-time, day or evening schedules. For more information, you may call the REOC at 232-2730 or visit reoc.brockport.edu. REOC and you, expecting excellence, achieving success.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by Tavern 58 at Gibbs, located at 58 University Avenue, corner of Gibbs Street, just 100 yards from the main Jazz Festival tent. Tavern 58 at Gibbs, open every day at 4 p.m. until well past midnight, offers steaks, fowl, seafood, and pasta, along with beers, wines, whiskeys, and single malt scotches. Tavern 58 at Gibbs will also have outside and indoor dining, live jazz, as well as provide shuttle service and parking during the festival. For more information about Tavern 58 at Gibbs, call 546-5800 or visit tavern58.com.
Hello, this is Paul Conley. Join me early on Monday mornings from 1 a.m. to 6 a.m. on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
You are listening to member-supported Jazz 90.1. We are Soundbites. See, there's a lot less time to eat that donut. I was caught with my mouth full of donut.
And hopefully I'm going to get things straight here yet and not cause Rob a heart attack and...
That'll teach him to not be here.
That's right. Doggone it, Rob. You're off enjoying yourself. Still, that'll show you.
No, he's down at the jazz festival.
And he's not enjoying himself, you're implying?
Yeah.
No, I think he's...
Not while he's listening to us, no.
I think he's home pulling out the rest of his hair.
Oh, he's going to get you for that one.
Oh, I know it. I deserve it this time.
He is definitely going to get you for that one. All right.
Ooh, that's just so cool.
On Wednesday.
I'm getting 800 megabit.
No, actually you're not. But if you want to think you are, good for you. On Wednesday, Apple patched 46 security vulnerabilities, half of them in the Safari browser and its WebKit rendering engine for the iPhone and iPod Touch, as it released iPhone OS 3.0. The company fixed nearly four times the number of flaws Wednesday than when it last patched the iPhone software. That was back in November of 2008, and it plugged 12 holes. Almost half the vulnerabilities, 21 all told, were tagged with Apple's usual, and I quote, arbitrary code execution, unquote, phrase. Lingo that essentially means that a bug is critical and could be used to compromise the device. Unlike other major software makers, such as rival operating system developer Microsoft and database giant Oracle, Apple doesn't rank vulnerabilities using a scoring system. Not surprisingly, 50% of the patches apply to bugs in Safari, the iPhone and iPod Touch's browser, or WebKit, the open source browser engine that Apple uses as Safari's foundation. Safari and WebKit have been the focus of most research into iPhone hacks.
They did patch that Java bug that...
It was been open for, what, 2 or 3 years now?
Well, yeah. Since October.
Sorry, but that is unconscionable.
Yeah,
I don't like it when Microsoft does it, and I don't like it when Apple does it. To leave a known vulnerability out there that long is unconscionable.
It was that hard to fix? It doesn't seem... Well, that's my point. Especially since everybody else fixed it.
Well, they have programmers. Open any door in Apple's headquarters, you're going to find a room full of programmers. Get them to fix it. That's just unconscionable. I'm sorry, but it is. There were 8 bugs in the core graphics, 5 in the XML library, 2 in the iPhone's email client, just a whole bunch of others. So if you haven't downloaded that thing, click on the device in the listing on the left in iTunes or on the system and click on the check for update button because you need to do that update.
In related news, Wall Street Journal is reporting that Steve Jobs had a liver transplant.
That certainly explains a lot.
In Tennessee.
They have livers in Tennessee. Yes. Well, you think they don't?
Well, it's not the state you ordinarily assume when someone has high-end surgery.
Well, but the reality is you go where the liver is.
But he's, that's it too, instead of bring the liver to you.
Yep.
But he's still on track to return to Apple at the end of June. The transplant was 2 months ago. Isn't liver transplant pretty serious and takes longer than a couple of months to recover?
Certainly can. Maybe he's not going to stand up a lot.
Yeah.
I still have a job.
Excellent!
I didn't mess up too bad, I guess. You know, I say, it's still
keep working on it.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean...
yeah, that too. But no, just getting used to the whole board and everything else.
And what happens when it doesn't work exactly the way it should?
Well, and that's the problem. I spent 20 years as a professional actor, and you put me on a stage. If there's a problem, I can ad-lib my way out of it, no question.
Yep.
You put me on the board, a light board or a sound board or like over here on the radio board, I don't know what to do when something goes wrong. There's no ad-libbing your way out of that.
Well, that's what I'm learning, and like I say, I don't know whether it's... just my miscue, but, I just settle down, and I'm getting there.
What was that story about you forgot to put on the costume underwear when you were on stage?
I don't know that story.
You blocked that one out.
Why don't you tell it to me?
There was something about you're supposed to whip open your robe and have this costume underwear on, and you forgot to put the costume underwear on.
No, that wasn't me. I would have remembered that one. I would tell it on myself. You know I would.
So, you're who I usually get my acting stories from.
But
that's the same thing in the computer world. When it works exactly right, it's great. And then when something doesn't work exactly right, you're crashed.
All right, kitties, I know you've been waiting. It's that time once again. Get your footy jammies on, grab a mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair. Because if we can slap them awake, God help us all, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Huh? Oh, I think I need it this week. It's been very stressful!
He's not sleeping today.
Oh, no way, Jose. It's just been one of those weeks. And I don't know about you, Steve, but I sit there and I wonder where people's heads are. Well, I get somebody, and this happened twice. You get somebody come in, they bring a system in, and it's broken. This happened to be an e-machine. And said, well, we got an issue. Well, yeah, there's a lot of known ones with it. Well, I need you to look at it. Okay, we can do that. Diagnostic charge. Oh, I told you it's broken. You're going to charge me to look at it? Yeah. Oh, well, why? If it's already broken, I don't know if I want to put any money into it. I says, well, wait a minute. If I'm going to put some time into it.
You're going to put money into it, yeah.
It's broken is not a diagnosis.
Yeah, there's thousands of pieces inside the computer. It could be a cheap part broken. It could be an expensive part
broken. The diagnosis is, this is why it's broken, and here's what it will take to fix it. That's a diagnosis.
And the thing of it is what folks don't realize is, because I started doing this, and I think Steve has too, is you get them, and if you didn't charge a diagnostic, you know, and you spend an hour or so trying to figure out what's wrong with it, and they go, well, no, I don't want to spend the money in it. Just, no, go ahead, forget it. And then
throw it away for me, would you?
Yeah.
Well, that's illegal. Right. No, you got to pay a recycling fee.
Yeah, you're dumping it, and they're sitting there saying, but why should I pay for something that's broken? Well, no, you're paying for my time to look at it to tell you officially that it's broken, and there's nothing worth fixing in it. That it is. And then if it does, we turn around and take that money that we charge for the diagnostics off the bill anyways.
Right.
And it's like, well, wait.
Everybody wants something for nothing, and a lot of people are just greedy and piggy. I mean,
we have a shelf full of abandoned computers where they never came back to pay for it because it wasn't worth fixing, and they're not going to pay us for our time.
Yeah, well, that's why now we get the diagnostic right up front. If they really want to spend that much time into it, you know, I'm not going to, I just can't. You know, but
no,
like you,
I agree with you.
I've got at least six of them in storage right now, and they've been there since last November.
Mm-hmm. And you can't legally do anything with them because they're legally not yours.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But you know darn well, and I mean, Samantha
I would start charging them storage fees.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I absolutely would. I would when they pay that fee, you make them sign a document that says if it's here more than 6 months, I begin charging the storage fees.
I see that in dry cleaners all the time. Items left over 30 days will start collecting.
Make them sign it. It's a legal document, and then they're responsible.
No, that doesn't work either. We've been to court.
The lawyers will sit there and tell you.
The judge looks at the document. Oh, she didn't understand that. She doesn't have to.
Yep.
To abide by it.
Just like you, also, you,
she signed it. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, or also if you try to charge them interest.
Well, I would
even though it
that.
Says at the bottom you charge them interest on outstanding debts.
Yeah, for something that's over 60 days or 90 days, you might as well just hold your breath.
That's why I got out of that business.
You're going to turn blue in the face. But no, then Steve and I are considered the bad guys.
Mm-hmm. And the vast majority of customers are nice. They know they've got to pay for service. It's just, there's, the two or three bad ones
somewhere.
You get. Yep.
Yeah. Well, boy, that stinks.
Just as another sidebar, which is getting me darn frustrated, is right now there's a bill in Congress, Congress.
Yeah.
And they're running ads on TV and radio because they're saying, make merchants pay their fair share.
And we already pay so much
money. What
they're
talking about is when you come in and use your credit card, you know how you get those mileage plus cards or the cash back and all that? It's us merchants who has to subsidize it.
Yeah.
Every time somebody comes in and swipes a card to get their mileage and all that, I get dinged. The bank doesn't.
Yeah, your Discover that pays you 2% back, they take an extra 2% from us.
Yeah.
So you pay that 2%.
Yeah. But yet they're sitting there saying merchants should pay their fair share.
And we pay our 8% sales tax, and we pay all the other taxes.
The banks, though, that are
And we have a 5% margin on our stuff.
Because they don't want to have it roll back to them, because we're not allowed to pass it on as merchants.
So maybe you should pay your fair share, which would be a lot less than what you're paying now.
Yeah, there you go. Pay your fair share is less.
All right. Kids, leave your cocoa mugs in the sink. Get off your footy jammies. Put your clothes back on. If we can hold them down. And the problem is we're all riled up now, so I don't know who's going to hold down. We'll put Uncle Dave back on the shelf for another week. It's an interesting world out there, isn't it?
It is. It's crazy. And, I understand, folks, right now, a lot
There's this. Who's pointing this out? Archandra is pointing this out in the IRC thing. Nobody goes to a mechanic and says, you're going to charge a diagnostic. Of course you pay the diagnostic fee to a mechanic. Even if the mechanic comes back and says, this car will never run again, you still pay the diagnostic fee.
Yeah.
And nobody just leaves their car to mechanics. Get it out of here, take it to a junkyard, do something with it.
We'll even use the word copay now and then. because people are used to that with a doctor. You got to do your copay. Even if you have medical insurance, you got to do your copay. Even if it's under warranty, there's sometimes a copay.
Right, right, right.
Because only hardware is covered under warranty. Software is not.
That's right. That's right. And if you have to fix software, if you have to do something software-wise, there's no warranty coverage for that. There never has been. There never will be. People don't get that, though. They get a warranty that covers everything for 4 years. No.
We had a kid. Oh, it was so funny. He bought an iPod, you know, $200 for an iPod, drove over it with his bicycle, and dented it in half and came back and said, well, give me a new one. Why? You broke it. Yeah, but it's under warranty. Just give me a new one. Yeah. No, afraid that doesn't work that way. Why'd you do it? I wanted to see if it would survive. It didn't. You've made a $200 mistake.
That's right, because there's no free
and
lunch.
Mom is standing right there going, you did what?
Uh-huh. Well, at least Mom was reasonable.
Yeah.
Can't beat that. All right, our next caller is Gus from Greece, New York. Welcome, Gus.
Hi, Nick. Hi, guys. How you doing?
Peachy, how are you?
Great to listen to you. Glad you're back on the air.
Thank you. We are, too. And we're delighted to be
here for a while.
We're delighted to be on.
We may be on the air. We don't know about him.
I run into Nick at the public market at his coffee booth once in a while. So
there you go. I wasn't there today.
No,
I dropped.
You were not.
I dropped my daughter off and fled.
Hey, I got
well, 4 miles an hour because I was in the public market, but I still fled.
I got a quick, easy, probably stupid question for you guys.
No questions are stupid.
I need to back up my address book in Outlook Express.
Uh huh.
And then what file will that format be in?
It depends on what you back it up with.
Okay, so how's the simple question, how do I back it up so it's something that I can read in case I ever lose my hard drive?
Well, there's two things there.
Right, then you can't back it up. You have to export it as a text file.
Right.
Okay.
You can export it as a text file, but if you back it up, you can't read it, but if you restore Outlook Express, it can read it.
Okay, so I want to do both of those things then.
Exactly.
And then how do I do the backup? Is it just from Outlook?
Depends.
Depends on what version of Outlook Express you're running. Some of them have a backup database. They all should have an export command. Or you manually go to the folder that the file is in and copy that file. The trick is no one knows where that file is, and it's different for every version of Outlook. And some of it's in hidden files.
Okay.
So I'm posting a link on our link list on how to back up your Outlook Express database.
Oh, great. And it'll be on soundbites.org.
Soundbites.org. Yep. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you.
Right.
Yeah, but just write in one of the menu commands. There's an export as text file, and then you can read that text file yourself if you want to see it. And then you can import that text file into any other address book program as well.
All right.
All righty,
guys.
Sure. Yep. Thanks.
Have a good day.
You too.
Thank you.
It is a beautiful day here in lovely Rochester, New York. The sun is shining somewhere.
Not here.
We're getting the rain we so desperately need for the crops.
Yeah, well, some places are really getting hit bad.
But the stupid lawn is going to grow now.
Stupid lawn is going to grow. My car is going to get clean. That's a good thing. Well, cleaner.
I was hoping for one of the Boy Scout Girl Scout car washes this weekend. Like every weekend in Parenton Plaza, near where I live, there's been someone doing a car wash. For charity and fundraising and whatnot. And I was going to do my car this weekend. Now I don't need to. Sorry.
Mother Nature took care of it for you.
All right. All right. Shall we go to the mailbox?
Let's do it.
Let's go to the mailbox. This is from Cindy from Penfield, New York. And Cindy writes, in a nutshell, I cannot update the definitions for Adaware AE. I have the program set for automatic updates, but it does not automatically update, and I have my computer set to allow full access for this program, but every time I try to get to update, I get a pop-up window with the message, connection error, check your settings. I went to the LavaSoft website, tried all the solutions they offered, none of them worked, I still cannot update. I tried manually downloading an update. They tell you to extract the zip file to see programs, data, LavaSoft, Adaware 2008. I don't have a folder labeled program data, but I do have a folder labeled program files, which contains the LavaSoft folder and the Adaware folder with many different files, but no file labeled Adaware 2008 to extract the file to. I didn't know where to put the manual download at this point and what to do with it. When I installed the program, it seemed to go smoothly, but there was no obvious installation kinks. The only way I know to update with the most recent definitions is to reinstall the program with the latest version. What is wrong and how do I fix the problem? By the way, I had Adaware SE before this and never had a problem with the program. I uninstalled it completely before installing the AE version. Thanks for your help.
It's probably one of those invisible folders we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, you gotta go into the preferences and unhide them.
Yeah, and tools, options, view, is it?
Something I think so, yeah. You gotta check the box to say show hidden files and folders.
So you can find those hidden files to put it in. The other thing you can try is a full uninstall and reinstall. That may help.
One thing, though, I always tell, which folks forget to do, is once they've, exposed them, is after you're all done, you get the problem corrected, go back and rehide them, because you don't want to accidentally wind up deleting or accidentally moving some files where they shouldn't be and accidentally, click on them and drag them here or there. It could mess things up. Once you're done, go back in, write down, have a piece of paper. Remember what folders that you clicked on to show, so you can go back in there, re-click them so they're hidden again. I've run into a number of folks that have done that.
Yep.
Oh, I lost this. Oh, sorry.
I don't know what this system folder is. Let me just get rid of it.
Yeah, right? Yeah. They're known to do it. So, you got to use a little due diligence there. It's just like we won't, and I have never, and I know you guys haven't either, is ever walked anybody through the registry. Yeah. I refuse to be responsible for going in and telling somebody, go into here, do work your way down. I've gone into the machines through Log Me In. I love that
remote
program.
Access, yeah.
That is fantastic. They quick set it up. I'm able to quick go in, make the corrections, boom, get out. And without them going into it, I've even had a couple say, well, couldn't I do that? No. I'll take responsibility, because if I click on something and delete it, then it's my fault if I screw something up. But not if you do it.
Yep. And then back to the question for a second. Adaware, the latest versions of Adaware seem to have been having a few more problems than they have in the past.
That's why I haven't been using it.
Right. One of the reasons we've switched over to start recommending Super Anti-Spyware
and
Malware
Bytes. Those two right now are the leaders in finding stuff, especially this Spyware 2008 and 2009, which looks officially like AVG.
Yeah, the bad guys are continuing to take advantage of the good guys' names.
Oh, the logos are there and everything else. Oh, you think it's as official as all get out, and they want you to pay the $29 or $39.95.
Right.
But evidently enough folks are listening to us that they're, saying, maybe not. I think it's finally getting through that, they just go ahead and Back off.
Don't click yes so freely.
Yeah. We've gotten in the habit. Yeah. It's just like when you go to install a program, you just go next, 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 next.
Right.
And they don't realize what they just clicked on.
And that's basically how spyware started, is that you just agreed to have marketing data installed on your computer.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Well, and people, security people have been saying for years that Microsoft trains us to say yes.
Yeah.
Every time they want to do something, a little thing pops up, and we just click yes. We don't even think about it. We don't read it. Bang, yes.
Yep. Like I say, it's just by default. Boom, 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 boom. Or you'll ask somebody, well, where did it install it? I don't know.
Well, there was a screen there that asked you where you wanted to install it, and you told it.
Or you tell them, well, you can change it. You sure? Yeah.
Like if you want to put your programs on the D drive, for example.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned it last night. We had a customer come in. This happens to us quite a few times. Customer had come in and wanted to back up her QuickBooks data onto a flash drive and was copying the QuickBooks program, not the data.
Right.
People don't understand the difference between program and data. We had a gentleman a couple of years ago that had been faithfully backing up his QuickBooks for 10 years on the CD, brought in this huge stack of CDs. He had only been backing up the program all those years, never backed up his data file. So when you're in Word, when you're in QuickBooks, when you're in any program and you hit save, pay attention to the name of the file and the folder you're saving it in. That is your data file.
Yeah,
so that's what you want to back up.
And especially if you're running a business, even myself, I was using back a number of years. Matter of fact, just as we were moving into the new shop on Empire Boulevard there, my Peachtree finally crashed. And we're going to switch over to QuickBooks. The wife was thinking maybe in a few months. But when Peachtree totally crashed, we had no choice. Luckily, like you say, I had the financial information backed up.
Right.
But what got messed up when it crashed was my whole database of clients. What a nightmare that was going back. And I only lost maybe about a month, month and a half's worth of clients that we had. I wasn't able to reconstruct. But at least the other part, you know, where other folks I've run into have literally been hosed because, like you say, Steve, they didn't take, you know, double check. And make sure you can even go through the actions of saying to restore just to get to the point where just before you click, you know, and say, yeah, restore this, you know, it wouldn't hurt. Or even that morning, I've got one client just to verify what she does is she'll do a nightly backup. And then finally on Saturdays, she has do a complete backup of the whole folder, like you say, files and the program. And then on Monday, what you'll quick do is just run through to make sure it'll restore.
That's the way to do it.
Because and then it's the same information before anybody gets, and boom, it's there. Okay, she's comfortable, and she moves out because she got burned. She lost 2.5 years worth of data. So she doesn't even trust the backups because she thought she was backing up, and it didn't.
Yep.
And you remember the olden days when programs would put the data in the program folder.
Right.
You go to save a Word file, it goes in the Word folder.
Right.
So then when you delete the Word 6 folder to put the Word 7 folder
in, you lose
all your documents. Yeah, that's why both Microsoft and Apple have created the Documents folder.
So Linux has it as well.
Yeah, if you don't tell it otherwise, it goes into the Documents folder.
I have everything set up to go into the Docs folder, and I back that up over the network automatically every night. And I even have a routine that extracts all the data from all my databases and sticks them in the Documents folder, so everything gets backed up every night. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
When you become a member or renew your membership to Jazz 90.1, you receive your Jazz 90.1 member card, our thanks, and more. Because with your Jazz 90.1 member card, you qualify for discounts at many fine member card businesses, including 45 East Fine Jewelers, Adams Basin Inn, Antonetta's Italian Restaurant, The Bop Shop, Bert Shapiro Photography, Leaf and Bean Coffee Company, Lorraine's Food Factory, Mary Boyce of Mario's Hair Studio, Mind and Body Connection, New Health Cafe, Sound Source, and Tuxedo Corner, Arondequoit and Gase locations, and Small World Bakery. For a complete and up-to-date list of member card businesses, visit our website at www.jazz901.org. To get your member card, call 966-5299 and become a member of Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 welcomes our newest member card business, Hedonist Artisan Chocolates.
They came from every corner of the country, from small towns and big cities. But they all shared one thing in common. They belonged to a family called Marines. A tough and determined few, dedicated to protecting everything we hold sacred. And still, they come. Celebrate the history of those proud few who have earned the title Marine.
This is Devon. Join me every Monday night from 9 until midnight as I kick off Jazz Horizons right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And you are listening to Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Give us a call. The number in the 585 area code is 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Outside the 585 area code, it's 800-790-0415. Dave is excited and delighted that he actually got through that break without disaster, death, or maiming.
But be nice to the next person that has to put their face in that mic.
Yeah. Yeah, right. We actually got a question on the Soundbites forum under
on the IRC forum on EFFNet, or EFNet, rather, and it's from Atlanta JI, probably Jim or something. The question is, what's the best way to format a PC, FAT32 or NTFS, and what is the difference? Well, from the answer, the correct answer, of course, is it depends. If you are running XP, the best and only choice is FAT32.
No. Didn't XP add NTFS?
Yes, it did.
Eventually.
Yeah. That's right, it did. NTFS, the NT file, you're right, the NT file system works for XP. I was thinking 98.
98,
because
yeah.
I'm on drugs.
DOS-based.
The hard drive itself should always be formatted NTFS. And the reason is that there are more security features under NTFS that are not available under FAT32. However, for greatest compatibility of movable media like thumb drives and things like that, you should format those FAT32 because Macs can read them, Linux can read them, and Windows can read them. They're less secure, but you don't care about that. You're carrying it around in your pocket anyway.
We found had problems with a couple of thumb drives that are formatted in FAT12.
FAT12?
And there's a limit of 31 files
right
at the root of the directory.
Yeah, that's why you create
right. The old.
So every time.
There's a limit of 255 under FAT32, by the way.
But every time this customer tried to copy a 32nd file, it said the disk is full.
Yeah.
Well, it's got 3 gigs left on it. How can it be full? Well, technically, it's the directory entry is full.
Right. But if you created a folder and put everything in the folder, you could fill as much as you want. It's only that root level where the problem lies. So,
one thing, though.
Then you win, Jim. I'm assuming it's going to be Jim. That's what I'm saying. He says, it's cool. I have this formatted NTFS. It's an Inspiron 700M running XP Pro. So, right. The hard drive should be formatted NTFS. Any flash drives, thumb drives, whatever you want to call them, should be formatted FAT32.
It was a big issue in the DOS days when we were shifting from DOS to NT technology, basically, that a lot of the utilities, like Norton utilities and the disk utilities, couldn't run on an NTFS hard drive. Now, pretty much, they all can.
Right.
You know, one thing, though, folks have gotten very complacent on, and we used to worry about it more back in the old days with the 3.5-inch floppies, is now these new flash drives, they don't come with a locking system.
A lot of them don't anymore. I hate that.
And people are just passing them around like crazy, saying, oh, here, yeah, go ahead, copy the file to there. Not before I scan it. They have literally forgotten that viruses and Trojans and all this other stuff can go from these jump drives to other machines.
Yep.
I use one. It's called an SD flash card because it literally is a flash an SD flash card that goes into this USB. And I can
showed you
it.
How to do those. Yep. I showed you that years ago. That's the best one. Yep.
The only one.
Here's a news item specifically for Steve. Microsoft has added a separate domain to its Bing search service just for pornographic images and video. No, Microsoft isn't getting into the smut business. Instead, the company is trying to make it easier for companies and organizations to filter out explicit images from its search results. Mike Nichols, the general manager of Microsoft Bing, this is actually a very clever idea, said in a blog post that potentially explicit images and video content now will be coming from one separate domain, explicit.bing.net. So this is invisible to the end user, but it allows the filtering of that content by domain, which makes it much easier for customers at all levels to block this content regardless of what is in the safe search settings. Microsoft has never done when it comes to providing tools to help customers, blah, 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 market speak. When Bing was first launched, there was some online chatter about explicit images popping up when videos were previewed in the search results. And Microsoft has been quick to note that by default, Bing does not return explicit adult content in video or image results. But Nichols did note in another blog on June 4th that individuals and corporate IT executives had asked for more controls. And that's one of the nice things. For example, this school district blocks a lot of sites like that, and well, they should. Mm-hmm. And so now they'll be able to add explicit.bing.net to what they block, and you won't see any explicit pictures or videos from Bing. Now, the problem with that, of course, is when they miss, because now they're setting themselves up saying, well, we're going to protect your children.
Mm-hmm.
The minute they miss, somebody's going to sue them.
Oh, big time.
Or on the other side, some of the cancer support groups end up getting filtered.
Well, hopefully this will be smarter than that.
Yeah.
It's really specifically for video and for pictures, graphics in general.
There was sort of a related issue and concern about Bing is that in copyright violation. Because when you look at the preview of a search result, it will play the song, it will play the video, it will show you the text. And
well,
they're not necessarily doing copyright.
Well, the RIAA stopped being reasonable 10 years ago. I'm sorry. Yeah. That's, they're nuts over there.
Mm-hmm.
They're morons. How do I really feel? I've been in a mood for like 3 days now. So at any rate, this is nice. If this works the way they say it's going to work, they can successfully position Bing as the search engine that'll filter out adult content. That scores them a lot of points with a lot of organizations, assuming they don't miss.
Yeah,
and that was one of the intents of the .xxx domain, is that all adult sites would have to use .xxx, so it would be easy to filter, and that didn't go over. Yeah.
Well, again, hello, it's the World Wide Web.
Mm-hmm.
Other countries can tell us to go pound rock salt. And
that's
what
right.
are we going to do?
That's exactly right. But, you know, they will, you know, it's good if they get it. It's good if they, it's bad if they don't. But the real question then becomes, what are they accidentally filtering out that I wanted to see?
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to see porn. I get
right.
that.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
but did they miss something that could have been useful and important to me? I don't know. That's a
mm-hmm.
tough call
oh,
on their part and on my part.
Yep.
So there are a lot of people who will have second thoughts about something
well, even
like that.
Well, like you say, art, you know, as far as pictures. And
although
that
I will admit that if you turn off filtering on Google, dang near any search under images brings up stuff you probably don't want to see, at least at work.
The adult companies are putting random search words in all their stuff, they're putting big search words like news and airplane in pictures that don't have anything to do with that.
I won't tell you what I was searching for, but the entire first three pages were clearly not what I was actually looking for. The first three pages! I thought, that's
not
somebody's
right.
enterprising. I'll say that for them. That's pretty amazing.
Well, this is interesting.
And what would this be?
Well, no, MySpace is filtered here at the school, but
right.
the Bing preview of a MySpace video is playing, because apparently that's been cached by Microsoft on the Bing domain, and so that gets through.
Well, you only get 30 seconds of it, though.
Yeah.
Right.
Oftentimes, that's enough.
Right. That's great. Why don't you tell all the kids? Say it again,
sorry,
just in case any of them missed it. Nice.
No, okay, so the school administration officials, you can modify your firewall, too, and your proxy settings.
Well, but unless that's explicit.
Well, yeah, I'm watching a guinea pig dance. I don't know
right.
why.
Because you don't have your sound on.
Yeah, that was intentional.
Yeah, yeah, and that's good. Yeah, I have my sound off, too. Yeah. The It's an interesting
well,
thing.
Well, and that was the copyright issue that people were raising, is that this video is now playing. And I haven't paid the copyright holder.
Assuming there is one in this case.
Yeah.
That's right. That's
but
right.
But going back, though, it's going to be interesting, like you say, if somebody does sue, how that's going to play out in the courts, though.
Well, and that's it. The only person who ever wins is the lawyer.
The lawyers, yeah. The lawyers are the only one to win on
that's
that,
right.
but it's like...
That's right.
Man, that's one stick I wouldn't want to be.
Here's one. Anything. I have to read this one because it excites me, and so I'm going to read it, whether you like it or not. It didn't take long for the FCC to act on suggestions from members of the Senate Commerce Committee regarding exclusive contracts between wireless handset providers and carriers. Acting FCC Chairman Michael Copps told a conference shortly after the senators met Friday that the FCC would launch a review of the exclusive deals. Also weighing in on this issue this week was Julius Genachowski, whose nomination as FCC Chairman was approved by the Senate Committee. Genachowski also stated that he wants to review the exclusive manufacturer carrier handset deals. In a presentation at a broadband conference, Copps said, "I agree that we should open a proceeding to closely examine wireless handset exclusivity arrangements that have reportedly become more prevalent in recent years, and I have instructed the Bureau to begin crafting such an item. The procedure will likely focus on AT&T's exclusive deal with Apple to market the iPhone in the U.S. Other providers like Google, with its Android phone for mobile for T-Mobile, and Palm, with its pre-phone for Sprint Nextel, also represent exclusive arrangements. However, Android phones are expected to be produced by other manufacturers, including Motorola, for other carriers, and the Palm Pre is expected to be offered by Verizon Wireless in a few months. That'd be great. In addition, there have been unconfirmed rumors that Verizon is planning to offer a version of the iPhone in the future. So I've always said this. I am the carrier I am with is certainly not AT&T, and therefore I cannot have an iPhone unless I want to switch my carrier. However, you know, I've got one of those deals where everybody on Earth who is a member of my same carrier, I can call for free.
Yep.
So and my wife and her sister, who is in Arizona, can talk for hours and hours and hours on end, and it means nothing to me. Go for it. Knock yourself out.
Yep.
And I'm not going to lose that. I'm just not.
Right.
So,
and that's sort of how the cell phone industry has worked. We have exclusive contracts between handset makers and cell phone carriers. You have to sign a 2-year contract to get your phone at a cheap rate. And it's completely the opposite in the EU, where you pay $600 for your phone and you have no contract you're committed to. So here in the U.S., we're used to getting our phones for free and committing to a 2-year contract.
Right.
But the interesting thing is with the iPhone is because it uses GSM and Verizon does not use GSM,
right.
The only way it would work is if Apple changed all the internal hardware, which they could do. But then
Verizon goes to GSM.
Well, what's going to happen is the 4G cell phone network is called LTE. And all of the carriers, GSM and CDMA, are going to use LTE. So as soon as we switch over to 4G cell network, any phone will work on any carrier. Unfortunately, most carriers haven't made the 3G switch yet. So we're looking at 2 or 3 years before 4G comes
this
along.
This may be the Vista of the phone industry. Everybody may skip it.
Yeah. Yep. And it made sense for Apple to go with GSM because it's global services mobile communication. The whole rest of the world is GSM, and America.
That's the G part.
The G part, global,
global.
And America uses CDMA. So.
Yeah, right.
Although CDMA is better in many respects, which is why some of the companies here wanted to use it.
So LTE will combine the best of all? Is that what you're saying?
So the 4G cell network is going to be LTE. All carriers will use it. It's the best of everything. So any phone will be usable on any carrier with LTE.
Nice.
And Sprint is starting their commercials. Oh, just wait for 4G. And I didn't know Sprint had a 3G network fully in place yet.
Well, they're not interested in 3G. They're interested solely in 4G. Exactly.
AT&T just announced that they're upgrading to their 3.5G network in major cities. So we'll see what happens.
All right. Excellent. Well, that music in the background tells me that
Dave can breathe a sigh of relief.
This has been stressful this week.
I
will do a lot better next week.
We are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. Thank you so much for doing so. I want to apologize to all our listeners, and particularly to Rob Linton, for what happened in the ugly radio segment of our show. But we're delighted of all the people who've listened in and on the line and also over the air and over the internet. You have been listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. For Dave Enright and Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. Thanks to each and every one of you for listening to member-supported Jazz 90.1. This has been Soundbites.
Bassman Chuck Berghofer is sitting in with me this week, talking about his first album as a leader after 30 years on other people's work.